Speaking of Faith is supported by the Fetzer Institute, sponsor of Karen Armstrong's Charter for Compassion. You can learn more at Fetzer.org.
I'm Krista Tippett. We've entered Ramadan, the holiest month for the world's 1.5 billion Muslims. We won't discuss Ramadan this hour so much as experience something of its meaning, its delights and its gravity, through the memories and musings of Muslims from far-flung perspectives. From American Public Media, this is Speaking of Faith, public radio's conversation about religion, meaning, ethics, and ideas. Today, revealing Ramadan. Ramadan commemorates the month when the first verses of the Quran were revealed to the Prophet Muhammad. It is marked by recitation of the Quran, prayer, and fasting, sunup to sundown. The Ramadan fast is a spiritual discipline of commitment and reflection, but it is also meant to align Muslims with the larger experience of need and hunger in the world. In that spirit, Ramadan is a time of active generosity, of practicing the core virtue of zakat, which translates roughly as almsgiving or charity. And Ramadan is a period of intimacy and of parties, of getting up when the world is quiet, before the sun rises, for breakfast and prayers with one's family, of ending or breaking the fast every day after nightfall in celebration and prayers with friends and strangers. This show grew out of an invitation to our Muslim listeners and podcasters leading up to Ramadan of 2009. We asked them to reflect with us on their lived experience of Islam, of what it means in a daily, particular way to be part of what is often referred to in the abstract as the Muslim world. We received hundreds of responses from people all over the world. And when we began to call some of them up and speak with them from their homes or offices, we were especially struck by the vivid stories about Ramadan that nearly everyone had to tell across a spectrum of life and spiritual sensibility. We begin with Samer Jurrah, who grew up in Kuwait, has lived in Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan, and came to the U.S. 2 decades ago. She now lives, writes, and teaches in Florida, and she spoke to us just before Ramadan commenced.
I just got back from Jordan, actually, last night, very late last night, and my family was telling me, why can't you just stay a bit longer and spend a week from Ramadan in Jordan or in Egypt? And I said, you will never understand this, but the best Ramadan I ever spend in my life is always in America, because I feel sometimes I'm the only person fasting. It's more strenuous. I feel like every day is a jihad for me, is a struggle to maintain my faith, to maintain my fast, despite the amazing food around me and the smells. If I go shopping or if I go to the mall, there is food everywhere. Everybody is eating except myself. And this brings me amazing strength. And I wake up very early in the morning. I can be lecturing. I can be driving to my classes 100 miles each way. I can be feeding the homeless. I can be doing amazing stuff that I would not be doing if I were living in a Muslim country, because the whole country would be fasting and I would be one of many. Last year, I was giving 2 lectures in a row in Sarasota to a college. And the lecture starts 1.5 hours before the time of breaking the fast. So I was giving the lecture, giving it, and at around 7:45, I paused and I just took a date and a sip of water, and I told my students, I'm breaking my fasting. And I continued another 1.5 hours. And then I had 1.5 hours to get back home. And I was not weak. I was full of life, and I felt, my God, now I understand what it means to be fasting Ramadan in America. I bet you if I was living in my mom's house, I would be dead if I missed my meal 1/2 hour after the time of the breaking of the fast. This experience is priceless, and that's why I did everything. I even paid extra money for my ticket to make sure I arrive before Ramadan starts, because this is where I feel I'm really fasting with a meaning and a purpose. Especially it happens that during Ramadan we go and feed the homeless. So there is so much food I'm giving those people, and people are telling me, why don't you taste it? Why don't you taste it? And I tell them, I can't, I'm fasting. And they say, why don't you just have a sip of water? And I say, I can't, I'm fasting. And you can't imagine how blessed I feel that I'm feeding homeless people and I am fasting and I can't touch the food. And that's the whole idea of Ramadan, not to be able to eat, to feel with the poor and the deprived. And I just love it.
My name is Wajahat Ali, and I'm from the Bay Area, California.
Wajahat is a playwright and first-generation Pakistani-American.
I remember when I was in, when I used to go to UC Berkeley, we used to always say, breaking the fast, we're breaking the fast, we're breaking the fast, we're breaking the fast. But I remember in my Arabic teacher, he's like, no, linguistically, and what you're doing is actually you're opening your fast. You're opening your fast with the date. So from then on, I've always said opening my fast, and you know, essentially the act of worship continues throughout the month. It just doesn't end with the fast, right? And I've been growing up with non-Muslims my whole life, right? So sometimes they give you, most of my friends were being atheists also and agnostics, which I thought was great, and Christians. So sometimes, you know, once in a while they give you these snide comments, and they're like, you know, how does a Muslim fast during Ramadan if he has, like, you know, sugar problems? And how, what does a Muslim do if he can't eat, if he has to eat? And I kept telling them that Ramadan is not just predicated upon eating or not eating or drinking or not drinking. It's a state of mind, and it's an attempt to achieve God consciousness that carries on throughout the day. So even if you can't eat the date, you can be nice to your neighbor. You can repair relations with your family members, right? And, you know, you can help prepare the meal for the Muslim who fasts. And so your fast continues, you know, after you open it with the date. There's a great story that I tell, and I wish I had more opportunities to tell it. You know, Islam has a lot of beauty in it. And I can understand the viewpoint of many in America who see the violence and arrogance espoused by reactionaries, which mars the beauty of Islam in their eyes. And that's understandable. As a Muslim American, I can understand why people would have that reaction and limited understanding of Islam. But, you know, it's also a religion which inspires the poetry of Rumi, you know, whose love for the divine has created verses that survive 800 years and nourish the spirits of lovers around the globe. And when it comes to Ramadan, some of the most beautiful moments that exist within the Muslim community and within Islam becomes manifest during this month. And I remember one time when I went to Mecca, which is, you know, the holiest site of pilgrimage for Muslims. And I was in Mecca and I was doing Umrah. And Umrah is essentially like a mini version of a Hajj. It's the easiest way I can explain it. And I was in college and it was during Ramadan. And I had just finished Umrah, which was took about 2.5 hours. And I haven't eaten anything. And I'm fasting. And it's hot. And I'm wearing these two white shawls. And I remember just praying that, you know, I wish the sun would set and I'm hungry. And I remember in this Masjid al-Haram, that's the name of the mosque, with the what you call the black cube, the Kaaba in it, the sun set and the entire world just woke up and everyone went to the mosque. And I remember about 15 or 20 children came up to me and each one taking my hand and tugging my finger and with smiles on their faces saying, come to the mosque, come to the mosque in Arabic. And basically what they had done is that they had prepared a small bowl with a date and some fruit and some milk. Thousands of these bowls on these mats for all the Muslims around the city who are coming to the mosque. And so these children who I've never met before in this life, you know, just one after another, one after another. Just come to the bowl that I prepared. Come eat the bowl from what I prepared. No, please eat my bowl. Please eat my bowl. And I sat there eating this bowl, opening my fast next to strangers I've never met before, and greeted them with peace in the mosque, in the holy mosque. And there was just a sense of overwhelming beauty. And I really, it's a memory that I cherish, that sometimes, you know, when you see the violence and the extremism and the arrogance and the ignorance and the anger, that memory nourishes me.
Yanina Vashchenko lives in Dallas. As she told us in part of an essay we asked her to read, Ramadan was a way into Islam for her.
So I first fasted for Ramadan, and I loved it. It was strange because I have never been a person who skipped a meal or gave up the extra piece of cake. So how could I not eat or drink the whole day over and over again? It had to be something bigger than my base desires that was driving me. And that was the most peaceful I had ever felt. It was unreal. And of course, it was not something I was going to forget about, but it led me further and further into Islamic practices.
Yanita's family moved from Russia to Texas when she was 8 years old. She was raised in Eastern Orthodox Christianity, spent several years as a non-denominational Christian, and converted to Islam 5 years ago in her early 20s.
I know a lot of converts, and I know the convert syndrome, especially with Islam. And that is to be better than and more pious than the born Muslims, because you feel like you have to make up for the fact that you're starting late or you don't know all the rules and things like that. And I don't have that feeling at all. So I don't use Arabic words in my speech. I don't dress a certain way because in Islam, it doesn't say you have to. I mean, I haven't found any proof that you have to. And that's the good thing about it. This religion in particular tells you you choose your own path. You use your own brain and you act according to the rules that have been given. But there's always that emphasis on finding out the best way to do something. Two special resonance moments, I guess. The first time I fasted for Ramadan, I actually did it for the whole 30 days. It was just a completely new experience for me. And the fact that you just get this indescribable peaceful feeling. I mean, it's almost, you don't know why it's happening, but not only are you practicing self-restraint, and it's almost like you're doing something for a higher power, I guess that's where the peaceful feeling comes in. And that was the first time I had ever felt that way before. So that's a special memory. And also, it's hard to learn the movements and the prayers in Arabic, you know, and do them in the correct way and sequence. It took a while of, you know, practicing in order to commit that to memory. So when I could do it, I felt like it was almost like I was finally committed to something. And when it was something that was a little difficult. And anytime something is difficult, you appreciate it more when you succeed or you master it, I guess. So in that sense, it was an accomplishment. And from now on, I'll never forget those words. You know, once you commit something to memory, even if you don't say it for a long time, it's always there. And I feel like no matter what, I can always pray and use those words to have peace and inner calm.
I'm Krista Tippett, and this is Speaking of Faith from American Public Media, today with stories, memories, and musings from inside the experience of Ramadan. 30 Muslims told their stories over 30 days. Take that journey with them. Find out how at speakingoffaith.org.
So my name is Maria Enriqueta Romero, And this August 2009, it'll be 11 years since I took Shahada and came to Islam.
Maria lives in Seattle. She is Mexican-American, a lawyer, a single mother. She grew up Roman Catholic and married an Arab Muslim man. Only after their divorce did she convert to Islam. Maria has a defining memory of fasting during Ramadan after she had separated from her husband.
I think the most difficult Ramadan was, I hadn't converted to Islam yet, but I was, quote, studying Islam. And so that Ramadan came around and I was fasting. And my mother was quite opposed to me coming to Islam. Like, why didn't you come to Islam while you're married to this person? That I could understand. I can't understand you do it on your own. In years past, in order to support him, I would fast with him during Ramadan, even though I wasn't a Muslim. And the year we got married, Ramadan and Lent fell around the same time. And I had told him, okay, I'll fast with you, but on Fridays we have to break our fast with fish because I can't have meat on Fridays. You know, but things get better. Last year we opened our home to single and convert Muslim females because I know what it's like to not have a tradition, a family gathering in your home and specific particular meals for Ramadan. And last year was the first year that I felt I had a home large enough where I could welcome someone and that I had the financial resources to be able to say, you're welcome in our home. I may not know you, but you're a convert or you're a single sister, and I don't want you to be alone for at least one night. We would do it on Wednesdays. And we're not having it in my home this year, but we're having it in cabanas because they're larger, because we hope to have more women.
Ibrahim al-Marashi grew up Iraqi-American in Northern California. A scholar of modern history with a focus on the Middle East and political communications, he's taught in the U.S. and Turkey and currently in Spain. And the curiosity that took him to Spain flows into the Ramadan story he likes to tell.
I was studying as an undergrad at UCLA. And I remember that during the day, a fellow Iraqi Muslim who doesn't practice the faith, she knew I was fasting, yet she was still eating an ice cream in my faith to kind of taunt my practice of my religious belief at the university. And I remember that moment because usually when you think about Muslims, you think of this one monolithic block who's engaged in kind of these Islamic rituals without any kind of deviation. Yet I still remember this girl eating her Baskin-Robbins ice cream in the classroom. At the same time, there was a Jewish person in the class, a Jew from Iran, and he was also had an ice cream. It was a very hot day. And he knew I was fasting, and he walked out of the classroom. And it just goes to show me that, you know, you have this kind of image of Judaism and Islam locked in this kind of intractable conflict. Yet it's those kind of daily moments. Here is a Jew from Iran, more considerate of my religious beliefs than a fellow Iraqi Muslim, that kind of reminded me of that it doesn't matter what religion you are, you could be sensitive to other people's beliefs. I mean, one of the interests I have, particularly living in Islamic Spain, is this kind of interplay of this kind of harmony in Jewish-Muslim relations, as well as what the Spanish term, the convivencia, the ability of Spaniards, Jews, Muslims, and Christians alike to live together. This is one of the areas I find that's fascinating to research, and I often remember that Ramadan incident when I'm reading various books and sources on this subject.
Sahar comes from a Bengali family. She recently completed graduate work in Middle Eastern studies and spoke with us from her home in Florida.
I have a lot of stories. the first Ramadan that I actually fasted the entire month. I happened to be in sixth grade, and I was really excited. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna be like an adult, and I'm gonna fast the entire month. And the Ramadan, like in the States especially, is always marked by Muslims debating whether the moon was sighted and whether today is the day or tomorrow, you know, the next day is actually the first day of Ramadan. But anyways, so the first day of Ramadan happened to be the first on the day of the first field trip of the year. And I was so excited about this field trip because we'd get to go to McDonald's for lunch and we didn't have to bring our bagged lunches. So, like, when I found out that Ramadan was starting on the day of the field trip, I was so mad. And then I thought to myself, you know, I should be a really good spiritual person and consider this as like part of the struggle, you know, the struggle being Muslim. And of course, my friends, they didn't make it any easier. So when we went to McDonald's and everybody ordered their meals, I just sat there staring at them, and I remember one of my friends, she kept eating her fries, like, really slowly in front of me and telling me, like, don't you want some fries? Don't you wish you could eat these? And I kept saying, no, I'm fasting, I can't eat them. And then at the, like, maybe half an hour later, or before we were about to leave, the manager came up. And she was like, I'm looking for a young lady in a plaid shirt. And she saw me, and she said, this is for you. There was two gentlemen who wanted me to give this to you. And there were, like, two big meals, like, you know, with the burger and fries and drinks. I remember those two men, like, they were looking at us because all of my friends were teasing me. And they were wearing scrubs, so they looked like, you know, they were either med students or physicians. And they must have thought, one, that I was poor and I didn't have the money to get food and I was too proud to ask anyone else for food, or that I was starving myself and I was just another girl with some kind of eating disorder. But anyways, it was a really nice gesture, you know. But at the same time, I couldn't eat it. There's still 4 hours left for breaking the fast. So I gave away the burgers, and I gave away the drinks, and I broke my fast with the fries and my first Ramadan. That's always a memory I turn to and laugh about. Speaking of being Muslim in America. Yeah.
My name is Adnan, although I am Turkish. My name is Arabic after my great-grandfather's name. And right after the 9/11, this name, Adnan, has been on the most wanted list of FBI. And so it had a certain association in people's mind, and hearing Adnan, people were getting a little concerned, maybe.
Adnan Onart lives in Boston, Massachusetts, where he and his wife are active Muslim members of a Unitarian Universalist congregation. We finish this first half of our program with a poem, Ramadan in Dunkin' Donuts, which Adnan wrote and read for us.
Ramadan in Dunkin' Donuts. From his asking about the time and double-checking his watch, I understood. He was about to break his fast. Salamun alaikum, I said, the only Arabic I knew for all practical purposes. Alaikum salam, he replied. He was setting his table. Two donuts, one chocolate glaze, the other Boston cream, and a thick lentil soup he had apparently brought from the grocery store across the street. Do you want to sit down and share? I thanked him, no. Aren't you fasting? I explained my high blood pressure, my medication. He pointed to one of the donuts. Still, he said, let's share. the collapsing Twin Towers, the beheaded hostages, and the jumpy look on people's faces hearing my name. We already do, I said.
Poetry was Adnan Onart's response to our invitation for expressions of Muslim identity. He first submitted Morning Prayer, which he wrote as he was coming out of a deep depression. You can read, stream, and download 4 poems of his, including Ramadan and Dunkin' Donuts, on our website, speakingoffaith.org. We've also created an interactive map there of the more than 30 Muslims we interviewed for this program. Explore the richness of their lives and stories from Seattle to Madrid. Check out our Revealing Ramadan website and subscribe to the podcast at speakingoffaith.org. Coming up, Ramadan on a shop floor in the Garment District of New York, Ramadan sermons in Texas devoted to domestic violence, Ramadan in Manchester, England, Ramadan and Rumi.
We start every chapter, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, which means, in the name of Allah, the most merciful, the most kind. With regards to time, surely humankind is at a loss, except those who believe and do good deeds, and are steadfast in truth, and are steadfast with patience.
I'm Krista Tippett. Stay with us. This program comes to you from American Public Media.
Speaking of Faith is supported by the Fetzer Institute, sponsor of Karen Armstrong's Charter for Compassion. You can learn more at Fetzer.org and by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. You can meet people talking about faith at speakingoffaith.gather.com.
I'm Krista Tippett, and this is Speaking of Faith, conversation about religion, meaning, ethics, and ideas. Today, revealing Ramadan, exploring the delights and the gravity of Islam's holiest month. Ramadan commemorates the revelation of the earliest verses of the Quran to the Prophet Muhammad. It shifts along the Western calendar across time, according to cycles of the moon, and depending on the lunar cycles of any given year, it is either 29 or 30 days long. We gathered the voices of this hour heading into Ramadan of 2009. We invited Muslims to tell us what it means to be Muslim in our time, in spiritual but also in practical human terms. And we received essays from people all over the world. They range in age from their teens to their 70s. They are Iraqi-American, Californian, but also Mexican-American and Russian-American converts from other faiths. Quite a few have written to us from robust Muslim communities in places like Dallas and Seattle. For this show, we called up a few at home or work to hear their voices. Together, they embody the multiplicity and singularity, as one put it, of this tradition of 1.5 billion people.
My name is Feruze Feyzan. I am from Turkey, and I've been living in the United States in New York City for the past 20-something years.
After an early marriage in the U.S., Feruze met, as she says, the love of her life, her current partner, a woman. This is a source of estrangement between her and her family. Her Islamic sensibility is deeply influenced by the Sufi poetry of Rumi and others that she breathed in the air of her childhood in Istanbul.
Fasting is a very interesting experience. The fact that, first of all, it teaches you that you can do so much more than you think you can. It could be 90 degrees, and on a regular day, which is not Ramadan, on a regular day when you don't have to fast, you can't go without drinking water more than an hour. But during Ramadan, for some reason, you can. You can go the whole day, and at the end of the day, when you take that first sip of water, it is the sweetest thing in the world. that accomplishment that, wow, I can actually do this. That was always a big deal for me. Even as a young child, even though I didn't do the whole month, but I did a day here, a day there, I was like, wow, I could actually do this. If I can do this, God knows what else I can do. And fasting clears my mind. I can only talk for myself, but I feel that it really, I can concentrate more and I can meditate much deeper. And the reason for this, I read from a author from Turkey, Ahmed Hulusi, he explains it. He says, when you're not fasting, a lot of your blood and a lot of your bodily energy is around your intestines, your stomach, so your brain loses out on a lot of energy. But once you stop input to the stomach, now your body can really heal other parts, and the brain can take as much energy as it needs and wants. So your thought is much clearer, and your understanding, when you read, when you meditate, you understand much more.
My name is Tayyiba Sayed. I am from Glendale Heights, Illinois. I am 28 years old, mom of two. I substitute at various Islamic schools when I have time. And other than that, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I'm helping take care of my parents throughout the week.
In My Faith, Tayyiba wrote to us, parents are highly regarded. We have to honor and respect them unreservedly and treat them with utter kindness. And her Ramadan story revolves around her father.
I do remember watching my parents and my older siblings fasting as a younger child and wanting to, you know, be able to fast too, because it's such a big part of our faith. And so I think I was maybe 9 or 10 years old. And kids do not have to fast till after puberty or once you've entered puberty. So, you know, I woke up. We have to eat before the sun comes up in the morning. So I woke up, you know, and I had some breakfast. And I think around 9, 10 o'clock, I told my father, I was like, I think I can do this. I think I can continue the rest of the fast. And he was so concerned, and he's like, No, you know, you're too little. You do not need to fast. It's not obligatory on you. Don't worry about it. And I was like, no, Dad, I can do it. Just let me try. Just let me get through the rest of the day. And he's like, you know, let's take baby steps. You know, you woke up. That's a big thing. You had breakfast with us. That's a big thing. You know, maybe next year you can fast for half the day. But I remember he's like, here, drink this water and break your fast. And I was so devastated. I felt like I was so disappointed. And but when I was able to fast, you know, it was a great big deal. And it's a very, with the child's first fast is a big deal in our faith. And but yeah, that's one of the first memories I have of Ramadan. And it's a beautiful month of spirituality and unity and family and community coming together, and a lot of time spent in the mosque and prayer and reading the Quran, and I love it. I'm really excited about the month.
My name is Ali Ramadan, and I'm from Durwood, Maryland. I was born as a Muslim here in America more than 65 years ago. And I did not stress that fact in my life as a child.
Ali is now himself the father of 11 children. He retired last year as a federal prosecutor. He does not fast during Ramadan for health reasons. Even so, like many with whom we spoke from very different directions, Ramadan is still a kind of prism for the way he understands and lives Islam.
Well, first off, my faith, what I enjoy about it and what I've always treasured about it is that I saw it as a personal faith. In other words, there was nothing between me and my God. And so it allowed me to interpret certain things. It allowed me a greater freedom in my understanding of my God. And so as I try to practice my faith and praying five times a day, it constantly, in a sense, keeps me in as a reminder and in contact with my faith in my God, and therefore I try to remain humble. I think it helps me to remain humble. And when you remain humble in a world, you approach people in a kind of a equality. It manifests itself in everything I do. Because I am a diabetic, I don't fast during the month of Ramadan. I know the month of Ramadan is a time of discipline, but I don't see fasting and I don't see it as something that God wanted us to put our lives in danger on. There are other ways that I try to celebrate the month. I try to be a little more generous than I normally am. And so I try to compensate in other ways.
My name is Nadia Sheikh Bandukta. I live near Princeton, New Jersey. My father was born and raised in Kenya, moved to England, came to America, sounded just like me, or any other Joe. And my mom was from Pakistan, came over when she was 15, but still sounds like she just moved over.
Nadia just graduated from college with a degree in political science. She's working at a nonprofit focused on immigration issues and is writing her first novel. Her Ramadan memory is set in a household goods store in the garment district of New York City that her father owned.
After he came back from England, he opened up a small retail store, and it was a largely Jewish-populated district, and it's a largely Jewish-populated kind of business as well. And my father's business partner was a man named Isaac Cohen. And he broke the fast with us almost every time I visited the store with my dad. We would just sit around. The security guards were African descent. The cashiers were from, you know, Southeast Asia. The women on the floor that helped the customers with certain questions were Hispanic, you know, exactly kind of the microcosm of what New York is in the small retail store, you know, with about 40 employees. And at the time to break fast, you would see the people behind the register just kind of eating and breaking the fast, and just us going around with trays, and me and my sisters going around with trays, giving dates to everyone in the store. Sometimes customers would be like, oh, do you sell these in the store? And no, we're breaking the fast. Would you like one? And they would eat it, and it would be interesting, and they would ask where it was sold. And it was not about the eating. It was about sharing. It was nice. It was just it was a whole experience.
I'm Krista Tippett, and this is Speaking of Faith from American Public Media. Today, Revealing Ramadan. Longer versions of the stories you've heard thus far and many others are available for download on our website. And get our special podcast daily for the 30 days of Ramadan at speakingoffaith.org. Stories, memories, and musings from inside far-flung experiences of Islam's holiest month.
When I first started the transition from party girl to I'm going to wear hijab and devote myself to God, it was definitely a rough transition. There's a lot that you have to learn if you want to really take another religion into your heart.
Nicole Queen was born in Houston and raised Southern Baptist. Out of college, she worked as a photographer covering celebrities and nightlife. As she grew disillusioned with that lifestyle, she became intrigued with the ideas and preaching of Yusuf Estes, a fellow Protestant Christian Texan who converted to Islam nearly 3 decades ago. Now in her late 20s, Nicole is a practicing Muslim, as is her husband and his family. She is very involved in the Muslim community of Dallas and focuses on photography and blogging on charitable and Islamic subjects.
I started to fast the month of Ramadan 2 years before I actually converted to Islam because I used to think it was just a pretty cool thing. Like people said, you know what, this month I'm not going to eat or drink anything until the sun goes down, and that kind of makes you all equal. Like everybody is hungry, everybody's thirsty, and it also humbles you. Like it teaches you what it's like for the people who don't have access to all the food and water that we have. So I would fast on my own, you know, like, or with a couple of friends. I would fast through the month, and it felt great. And I remember my first year to fast Ramadan as a Muslim, I thought, oh, you know, I've done this before. But when you fast as a Muslim, I remember it was just completely different feeling. You feel like you're glowing the whole month, you know, and it's a really tough thing to do because when you fast as a Muslim, you're not just fasting. You have lots of extra praying and everything, your intentions the whole time are about, you know, worship and about what you're offering to God and your sacrificing that you're making. And you get together with other families. When you first become a Muslim, you just feel kind of alone. Like as a convert, you feel kind of alone because you're a convert to them and to your family, you're pretty rebellious. You're being really different, you know? And so I remember that first Ramadan, I really felt like I had a place with people, you know, I had a home with them and I had a place with my in-laws. And so that's, I think that first Ramadan was when I actually started to feel like I belong to one group or the other. You know, it really was kind of a special moment for me in that.
Yeah, my name is Sabiha Sharif, and I was born in Bombay, India, now known as Mumbai. And we've been here, we migrated to this country in 1982.
Until 3 years ago, Sabiha lived in New Jersey, where she worked in the corporate world. Now retired and also living in Dallas, she works in her community on issues of homelessness and domestic violence. As she tells her Ramadan story, she uses the Arabic word for mosque, masajid.
There is this organization that I'm a member of. It's called the Texas Muslim Women's Foundation. And last Ramadan, they had a domestic violence awareness day in all the masajids in the Metroplex on the same day, which was the second Friday of Ramadan. And that really comes to my mind because it was every, you know, on Fridays they have a sermon which is called the khutbah every Friday. And that particular Friday, which was the second Friday of Ramadan, this organization made it, requested all the masajids in the Metroplex to give a khutbah pertaining to domestic violence. And I think that was it was really beautiful because it brought the awareness. There's a lot of domestic abuse going on, you know, in families here, and it brought the awareness to the general public. And I thought it was great because the same thought, the same message was relayed throughout the Metroplex area on one single Friday. And it was done in the holy month so that, you know, I think people are more aware during this month because zakat, the obligatory charity that they have to do, is mostly encouraged in the month of Ramadan. And people just open their hearts and their wallets, and there are so many causes that come up in the masajids. So many people come and ask for funds, and people just give and give, you know, no matter what their financial status. And that, I think, is one of the beautiful things in Ramadan.
Thank you.
name's Stephen Longdon. I'm from Manchester, which is in the north of England. So this year, at the start of Ramadan, which you need to appreciate that the Islamic day starts at sundown, as with the Jewish faith. So at the start of Ramadan this year, it was at about 8:30 in the evening. And so we're all, you know, wishing each other a happy Ramadan in the family and our neighbours, and sending emails and texts and telephone calls. And obviously the children do that with all their grandparents and friends. And it's an exciting time, as you can imagine, for everybody in the family.
Stephen converted to Islam in 1990. The whole of the Quran, divided into 30 parts, is read in Muslim congregations and families across the month of Ramadan. We close this hour with Stephen's reading of a passage from the Quran that expresses the essence of faith and of Ramadan for him.
Now, you have to forgive me because because we're fasting, my throat's a little dry, so forgive me if it sounds a little raspy. So I'm going to recite a chapter of the Quran which comes towards the end of the Quran. It's one of the short chapters, and it's called in Arabic Surat al-Asr, which means the chapter's name is time. So here goes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wal-Asr. Inna insana lafi khusr. Illa alladhina amanu wa amilu as-salihati wa tawasu bil-haq. So that's my little effort at reciting the Quran. And in English, I'll translate that. So we start every chapter, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, which means, in the name of Allah, the most merciful, the most kind. With regards to time, surely humankind is at a loss, except those who believe and do good deeds and are steadfast in truth and are steadfast with patience. And that's it.
This show came about unexpectedly. We were listening to stories of Muslims we recorded for another show that we called Living Islam, and nearly every person had a defining, sparkling Ramadan memory to share. So we decided to create a place, a special place for others to hear these embodied reflections in and of themselves. The result is our 30-day Ramadan podcast and this radio show. You can listen or download all these stories on our website, speakingoffaith.org. And we have some pretty exciting and slightly scary news. Starting in mid-September, this program is changing its name. This is not a change in what we do on the show. This will still be public radio's conversation about faith, meaning, ethics, and ideas. But we want to more spaciously reflect how that conversation has grown and evolved, what we've learned from our guests and our listeners. The Ramadan stories we just heard are, for me, a classic example of the way we've broken open the very notion of what it means to speak of faith. It's not an exploration of beliefs to argue about. It is an exploration of how we live our deepest virtues and questions, and how these virtues and questions find expression in every sphere of life and across boundaries of belief and of non-belief. So please find my thoughts on the next name of this program. I've written them up and called it From Faith to Being. You'll find it at our blog, SOF Observed, which you can always access through speakingoffaith.org. And of course, let us know what you think about the next phase of this adventure. This program is produced by Colleen Scheck, Chris Heagle, Nancy Rosenbaum, and Shubha Bala. Ann Breckbill is our web developer. Trent Gillis is our senior editor. Special thanks this week to Omid Safi. Kate Moose is our managing producer, and I'm Krista Tippett.
Speaking of Faith is supported by the Fetzer Institute, sponsor of Karen Armstrong's Charter for Compassion. You can learn more at fetzer.org. Additional support comes from the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at fordfoundation.org. The Luce Foundation's Henry R. Luce Initiative on Religion and International Affairs. Speaking of Faith is extending its reach throughout America with support from Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private foundation.
Next time, I speak with Jacqueline Novogratz. Her Acumen Fund is helping reinvent the controversial landscape of global aid and development. She calls her approach patient capitalism. Please join us.
American Public Media.